In an extraordinary speech earlier this week, Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona warned his party against becoming complicit in what he believes is the president's inappropriate behavior.
We must never meekly accept the daily sundering of our country, the personal attacks, the threats against principles, freedoms, and institution, the flagrant disregard for truth and decency.
Memorable enough. But what makes it even more interesting is that Flake's speech follows the warnings last week from two former presidents as well. Here's Barack Obama.
But all these things conspire so that our politics doesn't reflect our values. Folks don't feel good right now about what they see. They don't feel as if our public life reflects our best.
And here's George W. Bush.
At times it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization.
So all this led us to ask, how often in U.S. history have leaders issued similar warnings? Let's take a look at that. We're joined by Joanne Freeman and Ed Ayers. They're historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory, and it's great to have both of you back.
Thanks.
Great to be here.
Okay, first, just check me on this. You guys are the historians. This moment feels remarkable, but is it in U.S. history?
Well, certainly there are a lot of times throughout American history when people who are holding power or people who held power or ex-presidents have stepped forward and had something to say that banks on the fact that they made history, and they assume that that's going to give extra weight to their words of warning.
I see. Okay, so we've got several examples then to pick from. Let's go way back and start near the beginning. I mean, were any of the founding fathers feeling so compelled to speak out in their twilight years?
They did. They were getting literally thousands and thousands of letters from people who were basically asking them to weigh in. And sometimes they took advantage of that opportunity to issue advice or even sometimes a warning.
I was just going to say, it makes me wonder what John Adams would have said if he had Twitter, right?
John Adams would have been in even bigger trouble than he ever got in if he had Twitter. But he actually is someone who did have a really interesting message. He steps forward and says, look, I know you think that there was this golden, perfect founding moment when we were all sort of demigods doing amazing, great things. But the fact of the matter is, I sat in that room when they signed that Declaration of Independence, and I saw people signing it, and they didn't look happy or confident. They didn't know what they were doing. The fact of the matter is, we weren't so great. You are the same as us. And that was a really powerful way of Adams saying, you next generations have to carry this on. So it's a form of a warning.
And what about Thomas Jefferson, obviously another important founding father? I understand that he did sort of speak about his concerns in terms of the direction the nation was heading, even worrying so much about the divide over slavery that he wondered if a civil war could be brought about.
He did indeed. And, you know, this is after the Missouri Compromise of 1820, when there was a huge, fierce debate about the spread of slavery to new states. And finally, they come up with a compromise. But at that point, Jefferson steps forward and says in this one well-known letter, you know, I was going to sit back and sort of coast through my twilight years. Obviously, he didn't say coast through, but close. but I feel compelled to step forward because I have seen what just happened. He describes it as a, quote, fire bell in the night. Mm. He says it awakened him. It filled him with terror. He considered it the knell of the Union, which for the moment was hushed. But this is a reprieve only, not a final sentence. So in other words, bad things are going to come. This slavery question could potentially tear the nation apart.
Hmm. And of course, he was ultimately right about
Correct. That.
But forgive me, because I want to actually jump far forward and to the 20th century and another warning that came about wars, because this was from Dwight Eisenhower and his famous speech about the military-industrial complex given in his final address to the nation as president. We have a bit of tape from that speech, so let's listen.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
You know, I've read this speech and watched it a couple of times, and it is stunning in how wise and perspicacious President Eisenhower is about the power of the military-industrial complex. I mean, but why did he wait until the end of his presidency to say all this?
I think because it became ever more evident that the nation had been reoriented because of the Cold War toward a perpetual state of preparedness. You know, this is so hard for us to imagine, but he was calling for the Pentagon's budget to be cut. He thought that it was dangerously inflated. So we think of, you know, the great general, which of course he was, but he says about this military-industrial complex, he says, "We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted." So I think he's looking ahead, you know, at the in the 1960 presidential election between Nixon and Kennedy. There's a great talk about the missile gap. Who has allowed this gap to grow between the United States and the Soviet Union? And Eisenhower is saying, folks, we can't just keep building more and more of this capacity.
So in the moments where these former leaders or outgoing leaders feel compelled via their conscience to ask these questions or give us their perspective on things, did other people listen? That's what I want to know. Like, did the people coming up behind them listen?
Well, in a way, there's two answers to that. Did they listen and then did they do something?
Yeah.
Right. So yes, people listened in a sense. I mean, we know about these words in part because people were asking for answers and then commenting on them. But it's like all of these people in one way or another, these are power holders who knew better than anyone the threat of power misplaced or misused. In a sense, that's the message that they wanted to say. Not necessarily I have the solution, but I know what it is to have power and I know what can happen if that power goes astray.
It's interesting that I believe people would be hard-pressed to name many other words that Eisenhower said.
Right.
But people remember the military-industrial complex, right? There's something about the warnings of the people who've seen power up close that's especially persuasive. You know,
right,
when these people who have held the reins of authority say, let me tell you what somebody with ill intent or incompetence could do with those reins, I think it does get people's attention.
Okay.
They have the weight of history giving their words extra weight.
And perhaps sometimes they feel the weight of history on their own shoulders. And I'm thinking of Robert McNamara now, right?
Yeah.
Former Secretary of Defense, who gave, you know, this stunning it seemed like an act of absolution to me when he talked to Errol Morris in The Fog of War about what he did. But we have some tape from that, so let's listen.
We are the strongest nation in the world today. I do not believe we should ever apply that economic, political, or military power unilaterally. If we had followed that rule in Vietnam, we wouldn't have been there. If we can't persuade nations with comparable values of the merit of our cause, we'd better re-examine our reasoning.
So, you know, I really do feel like McNamara seems a little bit different than the other examples we've been talking about because it did, to me, it felt like he had to say these things before he meets his maker.
Yeah. And he's 85 years old. And he says, look, anybody who's had military power and is honest with himself would have to admit that thousands of people have died through mistakes, either the enemy or his own soldiers. But here's what's new with this nuclear weapons. There will be no learning period with nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
You make one mistake and you're going to destroy nations.
No, so this is really interesting and absolutely fascinating. But I keep coming back to this question that I asked a little earlier, like, do people do anything about it when those who came before issued these warnings? Because Jefferson talked about his fire bell in the night. We still had the Civil War, right? I mean, Eisenhower warns about the military-industrial complex. The United States Defense Department still has a, you know, the humongous budget. McNamara warns about nuclear war. Thank God we have not had one, but, you know, nuclear tensions are as high as they ever have been. So, like, what have we learned? No one's doing anything.
Well, that's a discouraging perspective, which just happens to be true. You know, and I do think that nuclear war is the great question hanging out there, because McNamara, this is 2004. Ironically, things did not seem as dangerous in 2004 as they do today in many ways. And he raises this hypothetical question. What happens when there are 2,500 strategic offensive nuclear warheads at 15-minute alert to be launched by the decision of one human being? You know, so I think that these problems, and we need to remember it's 40 years between Jefferson's prophecy and the Civil War. You know, how long might the prophecy last for Robert McNamara? It's hard to see how that doesn't just extend into the indefinite future.
They're preaching awareness, right? In a sense, that's what they're doing.
Right?
They're striving for awareness and, you know, hoping that that awareness will move some people to take action. But that's, I suppose, what they feel that they can do as these former leaders.
Well, you know what? I know that I kind of brought us to a point of a downer, but I'm going to raise us up by saying thank you, because my last thought is we always, always, always need to learn from history. So Joanne Freeman and Ed Ayers, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.